Translation and purport by Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. These three modes of material nature, being further manifested as matter, knowledge, and activities, put the eternally transcendental living entity under conditions of cause and effect and make him responsible for such activities. Purport. Because they are between the internal and external potencies, the eternally transcendental living entities are called the marginal potency of the Lord. Factually, the living entities are not meant to be so conditioned by material energy, but due to their affected by the false sense of lording it over material energy, they come under the influence of such potency and thus become conditioned by the three modes of material nature. This external energy of the Lord covers up the pure knowledge of the living entities eternally existing with him. But the covering is so constant that it appears that the conditioned soul is eternally ignorant. Such is the wonderful action of Maya, or external energy, manifested as if materially produced. By the covering power of the material energy, the material scientists cannot look beyond the material causes, but factually behind the material manifestations, there are adibhuta, adiatma, and adideva actions, which the conditioned soul in the mode of ignorance cannot see. The adibhuta manifestations entails repetition of birth and deaths and old age and diseases. The adiatma manifestation conditions the spirit soul, and the adideva manifestation is the controlling system. These are the material manifestations of cause and effect and the sense of responsibility of the conditioned actors. They are, after all, manifestations of the conditioned state, and the human being's freedom from such conditioned state is the highest perfectional attainment. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. Om Ajñāna-te-mirāndasya Jñānañjana-śalākaya Chakṣuruṁ-militam yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru, Shri Yutapadakamalam, Shri Gurum Vaishnavamsha. Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tamsajivam Sadhavaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Dalita Shri Vishakhansvitamsya. E Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadada Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Shri Prabhupada ki jai. So first of all, my humble obeisances to all the assembled devotees here and also online. Please, I beg your blessings so I can say something relevant and useful for today's verse. So just to repeat the translation again. Okay. right page. These three modes of material nature, being further manifested as matter, knowledge, and activities, put the eternally transcendental living entity under conditions of cause and effect and make him responsible for such activities. So just to put everything in context, chapter 5, began with some questions by Narada to who? Lord Brahma. So Narada's questions were, first was, what are the symptoms of the universe? What is its shelter? How is it created? And what does it depend on? And what is it composed of? And then Narada continued to say that you know everything, you are independent, and you are self-sufficient. And there seems to be no other source beyond you. But then he has a doubt. He says, but why do you perform all these austerities? Is there someone higher than you? So Lord Brahma then says, yes, you're right to have these doubts. I am subordinate to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then in text 17, he says, even I myself am created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then yesterday's verse, His Grace Vasika Rai Prabhu, he spoke about that through his Maya Shakti. Now, Lord Brahma now starts to explain about the creation and how everything begins. So he's explaining about how the Lord, through his Maya Shakti, accepts the three modes, three gunas of goodness, passion, and ignorance, just for the sake of creation, maintenance, and destruction. So in today's verse, now is explained that these three modes are further manifest as matter, knowledge, and activities, dravya, jnana, and kriya. And these gunas keep the living entities under bondage. So just look at the verse first, karya. Additionally, karya. So what would normally we translate the word karya as? Activities, exactly. Work, activities, something like this. But interestingly, in this particular text, the translation is given by Prabhupada as effect rather than the activity. So this shows the complexity of the Sanskrit language. One word can mean many, many different things depending on context. So this also explains why so many literature, especially Bhagavad Gita, are translated by so many scholars, and how the meaning and how the potency is completely lost, because when the scholar is translating a word, he hasn't got the devotion to understand Krishna's feeling behind it. And this is why one gets the translations which are not so accurate and lack all potency. So this is why we always stress whenever we meet people, if you want to read the Bhagavad Gita, for example, please read Bhagavad Gita as it is by Srila Prabhupada, because the translation we know is correct and the potency is there. This one Bhagavad Gita, as we know, when Prabhupada translated this Bhagavad Gita, there were already more than 200 different English translations of the Bhagavad Gita. But this one, and those all 200-odd Bhagavad Gitas put together did not make a handful of devotees. But we know this one Bhagavad Gita that Prabhupada translated created hundreds and thousands of practicing devotees. So, karya. Then karana. Karana, of course, is cause, the reason for something. It's the cause of action. And kartitva, the agency through which the action produces the effect. So this is the first line of the thing. So this verse is explaining how the living entity is bound in the material world. They're very important for us to understand what is binding us. Once we know what is binding us, then we can try and do something about it. Not that it's going to be very easy, but at least we would know the cause. Once the doctor diagnoses a disease, he can then start thinking about what cure to recommend. So this is why this text is very, very important. It's a very similar verse in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Anybody know that verse? The first line is exactly the same. So it goes, karya karana kartirve, same, right? Hetu prakritir uchyate, purusha shukha dukhanam, proktitve hetur uchyate. So very similar meaning. It says, nature is said to be the cause of all material causes and effects, whereas the living entity is the cause of the various sufferings and enjoyments in this world. And I've taken a little bit of the purport from Srila Prabhupada. It says the different manifestations of body and senses among the living entities are due to material nature. There are 8.4 million different species of life, and these varieties are creations of the material nature. They arise from the different sensual pleasures of the living entity, who thus desire to live in this body or that. When he is put into different bodies, he enjoys different kinds of happiness and distress. His material happiness and distress are due to his body and not to himself as he is, not the soul. In his original state, there is no doubt of enjoyment. Therefore, that is his real state. Because of this desire to lord it over material nature, he is in the material world. And the very next verse, which is quite famous, Purusha Prakriti Stohi, Punkte prakriti jan gunan, karanam guna sangasya, sat asat yoni janmasu. The living entity in this material nature thus follows the ways of life and joins the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil amongst the various species. So again, a little bit of the purport, relevant part I picked up. The verse is, Prabhupada says, right at the beginning of the purport actually, this verse is very important for the understanding of how the living entities transmigrate from one body to another. It is explained in the second chapter that the living entity is transmigrating from one body to another just as one changes clothes. This is the Vasamsi Janasi verse. This change of dress is due to his attachment to material existence. As long as he is captivated by this false manifestation, he has to continue transmigrating from one body to another. Due to his desire to lord it over material nature, he is put into such undesirable circumstances. So now turning to today's purport. So when I prepare for a class, I like to go through the verse and the purport and go line by line, really, and try and relate what I'm reading here, what is presented by Prabhupada in this purport, try and relate it to some verses from scriptures or some parts of the purport by Srila Prabhupada in various of his books. So that way, in my own mind, it sort of reinforces the message that I'm reading from this particular purport. And more, I like to obviously try and stick to the purport as much as so like this. Digging for information gives us a chance to read through lots of scripture and eventually try and understand where things lie. It really helps us when we're preaching. So yesterday, this Prabhu Rasikarai Prabhu was talking about, who was here in the class yesterday? He was talking about mining. Right, he was talking about mining, how one should be mining information from Prabhupada's books. So this is what I like to try and do, mine the relevant information from different scriptures and try and put it together so that in the end it makes a bit more sense to us. First sentence of this purport, Prabhupada says, because they are between the internal and external potencies, the eternally transcendental living entities are called the marginal potency of the Lord. So as we know, the Lord has multifarious potencies. But they are divided into three categories mainly. What are the three categories? Anybody? Antaranga, Bahirangi, and Tathastha, which means internal, external, and marginal. So, it means beach when you look at the literal translation, beach or a bank. So, because a living entity is standing or as if standing on a bank, so he can be in the water or he can be on the land. That's his choice. According to his own desires and his activities, he can be on either side. That's why it is tatastha. Prabhupada continues, factually, the living entities are not meant to be conditioned by the material energy. But due to their being affected by the false sense of lording it over material energy, they come under the influence of such potency and thus become conditioned by the three modes of material nature. So we are all living entities, and constitutionally we are all spiritual, and we can therefore only be happy when we are in the spiritual environment. This material world, this material environment is unnatural for us. We are here like a fish out of water. Prabhupada calls this, we are in a diseased stage. We're all in a diseased stage. We are all, Prabhupada says, yes, everyone in the material world is a criminal. We're here because of some desire that we had, which was separate from Krishna. And this is where we have ended up here. So, in the spiritual world, the living entities are always engaged in activities with Krishna, serving Krishna, enjoying with Krishna. But the reason why we are here is because we desired something else. So there's a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi Lila 4.165, which says, Atmendra Pithi Vancha Tare Bali Kam, Krishnendra Pithi Icha Dare Premana. So Atmendriya Priti. So that means trying to satisfy our own senses. Here, Krishna Daska Vilas Goswami is saying that when we're trying to satisfy our own senses, that is kaam, lust. And Krishnendriya Priti Icha. So the desire to serve Krishna's senses, dare premana. So that is loaded with love for Godhead. Srila Prabhupada often quotes this particular couplet from a Vaishnava poet. Krishna bulia jeev bhogavancha kare pashate maya tare japotiya dare. So Krishna bulia, when we try to forget, we want to forget Krishna because we want to be independent. As soon as we come to that stage, we desire to be forgetful of Krishna, this is the opportunity for maya. Japotiya dare. The maya grabs us and then keeps us tied down here in the material world. Lord Rishabh is teaching his sons in the fifth chapter of the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam. And in this very first instruction he is giving to his sons is Rishabh Uvacha, Nayam deho deha bhajam niloke kashtan kaman arhate vidbhujam ye tapo divyam putrakaye nasatmam Sudyet yasmad brahma saukham brahma saukham vanantam. So he's saying to his sons that of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies, the one who has been awarded this human form, you should not waste time and work hard day and night simply for sense gratification. Shri Radha Gokula Nand ki jai, Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai, Shri Gaur Nitai ki jai, Jagat Guru Shri Prabhupada ki jai. One should not waste time simply for sense gratification, which he says is available also to hogs and dogs, that eat stool with bujhamye. They are eating stool. So if even animals have this available to them quite easily, sometimes even more easily, much more easily than for human beings. So one should not waste time after sense gratification, because sense gratification is what brought us here and what is keeping us here. What should we do? Rishabhdev says, tapo divyam putrakayena satvam. So you must engage in the activities of devotional service. And such these activities, he says, that it purifies the heart. And once the heart is purified, then we attain the stage of eternal existence. And it is blissful existence, which is transcendental to material happiness. everyone here is after happiness, material happiness. But there is no real happiness here. Happiness here is very transient. So we need to take these instructions and focus on bhakti and devotional service to try and get out of this. Prabhupada continues in the purport. This external energy of the Lord covers up the pure knowledge of the living entity who externally existing with him. But the covering is so constant that it appears that the condition that... Oh, I've left out some translation in my copy paste here. Let me just quickly find that. But it appears that the conditioned soul is eternally ignorant. So Maya, Maya has two main shaktis. What are the two main shaktis? Go on. You saying something? Yeah, exactly. Trust Govind Prabhu to know the Sanskrit as well. So, prakshepatmika, which means not Govind Prabhu, which means anybody else. Rasiraj Prabhu, you were lipping something. Say again. So that prakshepatmika shakti, that means that is the power to throw the living entity into the ocean of material existence. This is the power that Maya possesses. And the other one is? Say again. Exactly. That's it. Avaranatmika shakti. Avaranatmika shakti means the power to cover the knowledge of the living entity. So here Prabhupada is saying that we're covered up. It's covered up so densely that we think that we have been covered up eternally. Eternally means the soul is eternally ignorant. There's a phrase that used, nitya baddha. So nitya baddha means eternally tied, eternally bound. Baddha means bound. So how can that be possible? Are the living entities eternally bound? If that's the case, then what's the point of what we're doing here? We're going to be eternally bound, whatever we do. So then why? How can somebody explain what does it mean, eternally bound? Say again. Until he surrenders, that's a good point as well. Prabhu, you were saying?
Srila Prabhupada explains that it seems from our perspective eternally bound because we don't know how long we've been here for.
Exactly. That's exactly what Prabhupada's explanation. He says that because we've been here for so long that we can't find when we came. So that's like eternity, right? So like that, the soul is, and then they did not know when they came in touch with material nature. And neither do they know when they will be liberated. So this is why eternal. That's it. But then the opposite of Nitya Baddha is? Nitya Siddha, Nitya Mukta. Right? So these are living entities who are eternally liberated. So they have never come in contact with material nature because they have never desired to be separate from Krishna. But Prabhupada also explains that sometimes they do come to the material world, maybe to support a pastime of Krishna. But when they do come, their difference is they do not forget who they are. So they always are conscious of their situation. So there's Nitya Baddha, Nitya Mukta, and there's another term called Jivan Mukta, which means Jivan Mukta means being in the material world, acting in the material world, but by consciousness being liberated. So you may see him doing everything that we all are doing, but consciously, his consciousness is so much in Krishna consciousness, in Krishna, that he is actually liberated. Jivan Mukta. And the beautiful verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Rupa Goswami. Anybody knows? I keep asking so we can keep awake. Govinda Prabhu would know. Iha yasya hare dasya karmana manasagira nikhilasva pyavastasu jivan mukta sa uchyate. Anyone who by his actions, minds, and words lives only for the transcendental loving service of the Lord is certainly a liberated soul, even though he may appear to be in a condition of material existence. So I always envy the devotees living in the ashram. Devotees in the ashram are 24 hours engaged in the devotional service of the Lord. And then they are all jivan muktas because they are thinking nothing else. People who are like us who live outside, we've got so many other things to worry about, so many other things to think about. So, yeah, blessed are devotees who are able to live in the ashram. So, yeah, this is also, there's a verse by the Lord to the Prachetas in the fourth canto of the Bhagavatam, 30th chapter, where he makes this point about Jivan Mukta. It says, Griheswavi satam chapi pumsam kushala karmanam mat varta yata yamanam na bandaya griha mata. Says those who are engaged in pious activities and devotional service, they certainly understand that the ultimate beneficiary of all activities is the Lord. And therefore, when he acts, he offers all the results to the Lord, and he lives his life in the pastimes, in enjoying the stories and pastimes of the Lord. So it says here, the Lord says, even if such a person is engaged in family activities, he is not bound by such activities. Because again, Jivan Mukta. And then one more, a very important concept is Jivan Mukta. So we can see another verse from the sixth canto of 17th, as I said, I was mining all these verses out. Sixth chapter, 17th canto 27. This is Lord Shiva speaking to Parvati. And this happens straight after the pastime where Chitraketu is cursed by Parvati. And Chitraketu accepts this curse willingly, you know, without batting an eyelid. So there, Lord Shiva says, Narayana para sarve na kutashchana bibhyati swarga pavargo narakeshu apituliyartha darshina. As the devotees who are solely engaged in the devotional service of the Lord do not fear any condition of life. For them, the spiritual world or the higher planets or the hellish conditions are all the same, because wherever he is, he's only interested in the devotional service of the Lord. So, going on to the purport, Prabhupada says, by covering power of the material energy, the material scientists cannot look beyond the material causes. But factually, behind the material manifestations, there are Adibhuta, Adiatma, and Adideva actions, which the conditioned soul in the mode of ignorance cannot see. So here, Prabhupada says the scientists, they cannot see because they don't want to see. They do not believe in a creator. But there's one scientist, actually, who was a good scientist, but he also believed in the creator. And that was Isaac Newton. And we all have the famous pastime. I'll just repeat it just in case of people who may not know. So Isaac Newton, he once made a model of the solar system. Beautifully done. He really worked hard, made it in such a way, and he actually made it in a way that it was on a crankshaft, and it would move, actually. Very accurately created, where it would move around exactly as the universe would. And he then put it on a large table and in his dining room. And next day, one of his atheist scientist friends came over. And he was admiring the contraption, and he was playing with it, and he was saying, "This is amazing. How long did it take you to make it?" And Isaac Newton says, "I didn't make it. I came down this morning, and it was just there." He said, "Oh, come on. How can this just appear like that?" So Isaac Newton then says, "You believe that this whole amazing universe, which is working so amazingly, and so systematically, that all came about without a creator, just by itself, by the Big Bang or something like this. But you don't believe that this came by itself, right? So how absurd is that?" So when I was a few years ago, I was actually here giving a class. Probably I think it was a Sunday evening class. And this kind of subject came up, and I was talking about the Big Bang and how absurd is it. And I mentioned something like, you know, In our experience, whenever there is a bang or an explosion, everything is helter-skelter. You know, there's things, oh, broken glass, everything is broken, you know, there's people dying, and it's just chaos. How can there be perfect order and everything synchronized after there's a big bang? You know? Can anybody think of anything, anytime there's a big explosion and everything just comes out proper, organized, nice, symmetrical? Hell yeah, Haripo, that's a nice one. Hare Krishna explosion does that, yes. But then in that class, there was a family, and there was a young boy, I think he was about maybe 10, 12 years old, and he puts his hand up, and I thought, I don't know what he's going to say. So I said, do you have a question? He says, no. I know when there's an explosion and there is a perfect design. So I said, when is that? And I thought, oh. So he says, when there's a firework that goes up in the air, it goes bang, and there's perfection. There's some nice patterns coming out. And I thought, wow, this is amazing, right? This is great thinking. And for me, I thought, what am I going to say to him? Right? He's 10 years old. He's defeating me, right? And then suddenly, Prabhupada and Krishna gave me the intelligence. I said, yes, that's true, actually. But who made that firework? Right? So even if there was a bang, there was an intelligent pyrotechnician who created that firework in such a way that when he goes up in the air, it goes bang, then there's perfect patterns coming out. So similarly, even if we were to believe that there was a bang, in the second canto, and also in third canto, I think it explains about how Lord Brahma first divides the material nature into 3 and then 14 from the stem of the lotus, right? So I was thinking, if you take a stick, a big branch, and break it, there's going to be a crack, isn't it? So when Brahma is making these divisions, maybe there is these bangs happening. So we can believe these bangs, perhaps, right? But even if we believe there was a bang, we must then understand that there is a creator who has actually then made the arrangements for it then happen so perfectly like this. So then moving on, time's running away. Moving on to this, the Adibhuta manifestation, Prabhupada then explains. So see, when we look at Adibhuta, Adideva and all that, we think about the threefold miseries, don't we? Here is a different angle to this. So here, Prabhupada explains. The Adibhuta manifestation entails repetitions of birth and death with old age and diseases. The Adiatma manifestation conditions the spirit soul. And Adideva manifestation is the controlling system. So I've tried to correlate these three words with the first line of this verse, right? So Adibhuta refers to karya. In this sense, as we know, in this particular translation, it is effects. So Adibhuta refers to effects because whatever effects we feel, it is felt through the people around us and the world around us. So this is how we experience whatever is happening to us, whatever the results of it. So that is the karya. There's the effect of what actions we've done. So that's Adibhuta. Adhyatma, a little bit technical here. Adhyatma, it correlates with karana. And karana is cause, of course. So our senses and the mind are the causes of our actions, isn't it? We do everything because our senses are driving us that way and our mind is allowing it to do. So, manasya-sastanindriyani prakriti-sani karshati. Everything we are doing because of the mind and the senses. So this is what is conditioning the soul, Prabhupada says, adhyatma. And the third one, adhideva, it correlates in my mind to kartitva, which is the agency through which the action produces effect. So it says under the supervision of the superior powers, karmana deva netrena, the Bhagavatam says, third canto, chapter 30. So the controlling system, material nature you call it, the demigods or the powers beyond us, they are the controlling system. So this is the agency through which we're getting our reactions. So this is how these three, karya, karana, and kartitva, are relating to Adibhuta, Adiatma, and Adideva here. So Prabhupada then says, They are, after all, manifestations of the conditioned state, and human beings' freedom from such a conditioned state is the highest perfection, perfectional attainment. This is how he finishes his purport, which is just ideal. He says the freedom, so freedom from cycle of birth and death is only achieved by devotional service. Devotional service is the only way that we can achieve this. There are other paths. People go through other paths, but eventually they have to come to devotional service for them to be liberated. Mukunda is the only person who can give liberation. So one of my favorite verses in the Bhagavatam talking about how, what is the duty, what is the real purpose of human life. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, second chapter, text 6, Sutta Goswami speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya. Savai pum sam paro dharmo yato bhakti rajokshaje. Ahaitukiyapati hata yayatma suprasiddhati. He says the supreme occupation for all humanity. Occupation is dharma. Supreme occupation for all humanity is that by which a person can attain to transcendental loving service to the Lord. And such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted for it to completely satisfy the self, the soul. So Srila Prabhupada has kindly given us this wonderful apparatus of ISKCON, and has given us the nectar of his books, which gives us all the perfect platform to practice devotional service and try and make our life successful. I will end here. Hare Krishna. And open for any questions, any comments, any realizations. Hare Krishna. Yes, Tarun Prabhu. One thing, devotees, I must say, that we must, whenever there's questions and answers, keep the microphone on.
Gauranga.
Because I'm always able to come to the temple, so I'm always listening online. So what's the name of the devotee who's doing Ram Lakshman Prabhu. I'm always firing questions, saying, why this? Why is the camera wrong? Why is the sound gone suddenly? Right? So recently he has made me part of the team. So now I am there and I'm able to monitor it, and he's given me the access. So I can remotely switch the mics on and off. I can move the cameras when they are in the wrong place and everything. And one thing I learned, actually, that what happens is if I speak, I stop speaking because I'm waiting for questions. And if the person is asking questions, Tarun Prabhu doesn't have a mic, and he starts asking the questions. So the little gap that there is there, the automation system that's so nicely created, it senses the gap, and it fixes the end of the class. And the camera will move on to the darshan, and Prabhupada's chanting will come on. So everybody online, everybody here is fine because they can hear what's going on. Everybody online, so here maybe there's about 20, 30 people here. But amongst all the platforms, right, Manor Media, YouTube, Mayapur TV, there are probably 200 or 300 people who are missing out on the nectar of questions and answers.
I hope it's only when I ask questions.
Say again,
Prabhupada. I hope it's only when I ask questions.
So always must make sure, whoever's in charge of mics, you keep the mics on so they doesn't cut out. Thank you, Prabhupada.
I think I forgot my question. Oh. Yeah, Prabhupada said that many, many liberated persons, many liberated, but hardly one knows the Supreme. So how you can call them liberated? Also, if you are liberated, means to be free from three modes of nature, which is kind of Brahma Buddha. So why you cannot stay eternally there? Like, why is called liberation if you have to do again? I mean, can call it, I call it the three types of liberation.
Yeah.
In real sense, there is only one.
So, yeah. So the question, Tarun Prabhu is saying that it is said that, what was the word you meant in the beginning? That out of many thousands of men, only a few can, this I think, which is the verse? 3-5, I think. No, not 3-5. Going, Prabhu, which verse is that? After many
Manushanam,
whatever. So the point there is that there are many liberated souls, Prabhupada is saying in that verse that hardly one knows the truth. So the point is, there are liberations, as we know, there are different kinds of liberations, five kinds of liberations. The highest liberation, of course, the highest kind of liberation is for us to be living with Krishna, right? Sayuja is merging with him. But Sarlokya Samipya, so that is kind of liberation. For the other liberations, they are, although they are liberated, but they are not in the knowledge of the absolute truth.
Then they have to come back at least, like a Sarupya, not Sarupya.
No, Sayuja.
Sayuja, yeah.
So here is the situation that Tarun Babu, people say, so these are five kind of liberations, right? Sayuja, Sarlokya, Samipya, Sarupya, and Sarsti. So these are liberations. So in my mind, once one is liberated, that means they are beyond the three modes of nature. So in my mind, although Prabhupada does often say that from the Sayuja Mukti, living entities fall back again because they haven't surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord. I asked this question once to Karthik Chandra Prabhu, because in my mind I was thinking, look, these are the five, why do you call it liberation if you have to come down, as Tarun Prabhu was saying, right? So what he explained to me was that actually if you are already fully liberated in the Sayuja stage, then you don't come back, because there are living entities in the Sayuja stage who are living there eternally, and all they have is bliss. They don't have anand. They have bliss there, right? But he says those who fall down, and in there's a verse that where Prabhupada quite often quotes, where he says, Arhuja Krichena Padam Padam Patant Yado Ada Nadrit Nadrita Yushmad Angriya. So he says that because those living entities haven't surrendered under the Angriya, under the lotus feet of the Lord, they fall down. But what Karthik Chandra Babu explained to me very interestingly is, if you read that verse, it says, how does it start? Vimuksa manina. So they think they're liberated. See, so what that verse is referring to is that people who haven't quite made it. So Karthik Chandra drew a diagram for me, actually. He said, if this is a stage, they've actually come all the way, come very, very close, right? But they haven't quite made it. And so those are the souls that fall back. After a lot of austerity and penances, they get to that stage where they're almost there. But because they vimukta manina, they think they have made it, but they haven't made it, and that's why they fall back. But those who have actually made it, they're happy to be there. That is what their desire was. They wanted to more or less lose their identity and remain in that passive stage. So that is their hook.
Okay, that's mean for them there is no chance then to remember that actually there's something higher or kind of very strange.
Exactly. Position. So for them, for them, because their choice was to achieve that kind of mukti. So they are liberated, right? It's not, they're definitely beyond the modes. They're not suffering, but they are not at the highest stage of liberation where you're associating with the Lord.
There's something like merging into Vaitarani, like Buddhists do or something.
Exactly. So devotees cannot imagine that. Devotees, Prabhupada says, devotees think that is suicide. It's a spiritual suicide. But thank you for the question. I know it's a complex subject that actually we get that raised many, many times. Thank you, Prabhu. Anybody else? Prayojan Prabhu, mic please. Otherwise we'll get cut off.
We were talking about the living beings that want to merge or think they're God, and they where they go is in like the, as you say, it's the Brahmajyoti. But it's explained also that their consciousness is completely covered then. They're the equivalent of trees, actually. In other words, they don't want to exist. And they come, and that's why they come back as trees.
Okay.
They have to start all over again.
Right.
So eventually, you know, as they say, they fall down, but they come back as trees because it matches their desire to have covered consciousness, not exist.
Fair enough, yes.
And that's what happens to them. So in that way, we should understand that they're never liberated because they've got to keep going through this cycle until they somehow meet someone who gives them mercy, you know, from, you know, like from the Sankirtan devotees.
That's right.
And they give them a book, which then may, by the inspiration of the Lord, they may connect. But it's to do. Otherwise, they just keep going through the cycle of birth and death again, you know, with this covered consciousness. And once they get there, if they're still fixed in their ideas of meeting Mayavadis and relating to them, then they'll do it all again and again and again. So it's unfortunate. So
yes.
They just want covered consciousness all the time, so they come back as trees.
Yes.
As it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita.
Thank you, Prabhupada Prabhu.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you. Prabhupada also says that these kind of souls that come back to the material world to perform philanthropic kind of activities, etc., etc. But other thing about the merging also, I read somewhere also that they don't actually merge. The souls are eternally souls. They are never going to merge. But they remain as sparks in the Brahmajyoti. So they are separated. But it looks like homogeneous. Prabhupada explains that it's like that, the ray of sunshine. The ray of sunshine is, to us, it looks like one homogeneous ray. But it's made up of millions and trillions of photons. So similarly, the spiritual, the Brahmajyoti is made up of these million trillions of these sparks, which are living entities. Right? This is how I understand it. Anybody else? Anything else? Oh, sorry, yeah. Srinivas Prabhu, mic please, Prayojan Prabhu.
I just back up Prayojan Prabhu's point. Vishwanath Chakri Thakur, he was writing books on Shyamakund under a tree. And he was fasting. And a voice was telling him, you must eat something. So then he was looking around, he couldn't see anyone. And the tree said, I'm speaking to you. I was an impersonalist in Benares.
Ah.
But because you're writing under me, now I've become purified.
Very, very well, very well. Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing that. So talking about mining, you know, I think Srinivas Prabhu is like a mine of information. Thank you so much. Srimad Granthraj, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shri Prabhupada ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande, Hari Hari Bol.